see over the podium. I'm Chris Dar from Culpeper. I'm an alcoholic. My surprise, January 18th, 2011, right after Martin Luther King's birthday. My home group's the New Stables Group in Madison County, meets Wednesday nights right up the road here at the Blue Ridge. Forgetting the name of the church. Our Lady of the Blue Ridge Catholic Church. I have a sponsor, do a lot of service work. I can't say I've had the privilege of sponsoring anybody yet. You know, last week I was here because, you know, the Redskins played on Thursday night. And I wasn't really planning on being here. I actually said to Myron, invited me to the Pig and Steak early and come over to the meeting. And I turned around and said, it's football season, Myron. I'm not going to make that. But apparently God had different plans, because yesterday morning Billy hits me up and says, we had a cancellation. Would you come down and speak for us? Now, it's a good thing and a bad thing. I didn't have a lot of time to think about this. Never done it before, so I guess good luck to me. But, yeah, I'm happy to be here, and thanks for giving me the opportunity. I came from a normal family, as most people would say. Mom and dad and a sister. There was no alcoholism in my family that I knew of at that time. Grew up right up the road in Northern Virginia. Been in this area pretty much all my life. I would say around puberty time, sixth grade, in that range, you know, I started feeling like I wasn't good enough. My mind started thinking a lot. You know, I wasn't as good as all the other kids. Had a lot of fear built up in me. And I noticed all that. One example is, you know, I was a pretty good soccer player playing on traveling soccer teams. Now, we had an A and a B team. I was on the B team at the time. And, you know, I was good enough that they wanted to bring me up to the A team. Well, I was fine on that B team. I was playing with friends, kids in my school class. I had a lot of trust with them because I'd known them since kindergarten. The A team had some other kids. They were from a different area. And as soon as I got on that team, I didn't feel good enough. I wasn't as good a player on that team. And most of the time I was on the field, I was like, I'm going to mess up. I'm going to be the one that ruins the game for everybody. Moving along, you know, we get into junior high, high school, you know, I always had a feeling of, or a fear of humiliation and rejection. We'd have school dances, and I was the kid that stood over by the bleachers all night, you know, watching that girl, you know, the one that was my girlfriend, but she didn't know it. you know, believe me, I've had more than my share of those. In fact, a lot of my problem in those dances was, what are other people going to think? You know, I wanted that popular girl, or, you know, the girl that was admired by many, not, you know, just one that was good for me. In fact, there was a situation in a junior high dance where one of my sister's girlfriend's sister was there, and she was all interested in me. But you know what? She wasn't the popular girl. Kept trying to drag me out on the dance floor. And I, for two reasons. One, I don't think, you know, what are people going to think if I date that, you know, go out with that girl? I lived the whole relationship in 5 minutes of her asking me onto the dance floor. And, you know, I view that in a way as a missed opportunity, because I wanted that other, you know, the more popular girl. I didn't want the one that, you know, that actually saw something in me and liked me for me. You know, after junior high, you know, I still haven't had my first drink. You know, this is all feelings that are going on in my head. I will say that growing up, we had a lot of barbecues, kegs, and, you know, there were sips here and there, but nothing of any importance. You know, the kids would maybe pour one beer and we'd all get a sip off of it, and that'd be it. When I moved into high school, you know, I still had that same feeling all around. You know, I made the high school soccer team, but still, I was the little guy. I wasn't good enough. wrestled. You know, I was good at sports, but still in the back of my mind, not good enough. And I will say, around, I hung out with some of the, let's say, a little bit shady kids of the neighborhood. My parents had, Joe, brought me up in the Catholic Church, going to CCD and all that, but I guess back up a little bit to eighth grade when you're getting confirmed. You know, I had a strong aversion to getting confirmed because I was like, why are you confirming me? You know, you're making me do this. You're making me choose this religion. You know, you're making me go through this. And that sort of turned me off to God at that point. In fact, the majority of that year that we were supposed to be getting ready for confirmation, a group of us would get dropped off at the CCD classes at night. We'd let the car go by, and then we'd all head over to the local park. You know, I think I made it in to the night that you needed whatever. You had to be there for this because you're going to practice. And I did that, and I got confirmed. But to me, you know, again, you're making me do that. I'm not doing that on my own. I'm not choosing my God. And I had a big issue with that. And also, in church, I just felt, you know, the punishment, you know, Catholic, you know, brought up, you're a sinner. Sinner from the get-go. So I always felt like I was a sinner from the get-go. On the other hand, my entire family was very religious. Aunts sitting around with the rosary beads, you know, always having the big Catholic weddings, all of those things. But another place that I feel like I didn't fit in. Now I don't even fit in with my own family. That was another issue, I guess, with me. I don't feel like I fit in anywhere. But getting on eighth grade, freshman year, somewhere in there, two kids that were more of the shadiest. My mom was pretty protective, you know. If I moved house to house in the neighborhood, I had to call her, you know. And I always got mad at that because we'd be a group and we want to move someplace else and we couldn't move until I made a phone call. And I ended up getting left behind half the time. But a few buddies of mine, I guess they're about 2-3 years older than me, had stashed some beer in the woods behind the swimming pool we all went to. This is my first experience of actually cracking a beer for my own purposes of actually drinking it. And I had more fear of my parents at that point than I did with what the beer was going to do for me or anything of that nature. It was a 12-pack of Busch beer sitting in the woods probably for a week. And they cracked them. Now, they were all joy. I took a sip and... So really, I had an aversion to it right there. I didn't really have any, you know, any desire. I didn't finish enough to have any effect. And again, even with that little sip, I was afraid of the punishment I was going to get when I got home. My parents weren't in any way harmful to me, but they were very stern, you know, groundings, and you know, I actually did get paddled when I was a kid. Just that sip, I was worried that they were going to smell alcohol on my breath. Probably a little later on in that year, because I still didn't have my driver's license, this 14 or 15, I started hanging around people that were drinking at parties and stuff. And my one best friend that I had, he was into it. He drank a lot, and you know, I just sort of sat on the sidelines. But we had an occasion where the parents had all gone out of town, and an older kid in the neighborhood who was willing to buy beer bought us all beer, and we managed to have a 3-4 person party in his basement. That night, I was like, well, this is a little safe. I'm staying here overnight. I can try the beer. It won't be a big deal. Don't have to worry about getting punished. And they actually were coaxing me on. We want to see what Chris is like drunk. I didn't necessarily know I wanted to see how I was drunk, but I tell you, that night the beer was cold, and it went down easy, and one led to another, and to another, and to another, and I was having the time of my life. They were laughing at my jokes. You know, things were going real well. Doing some stupid things. I went to the top of the steps and dove down the steps. You know, who would have thought you'd do that? Now, the other part, which I should have known as a warning, was probably about three quarters of the way through the night I threw up. They took me into the bathroom. Luckily, I got to the bathroom, but I threw up. But it didn't stop. I had more beer that night. And one thing that's still one of my addictions today that I got started on that night was chewing tobacco. I tell you, the beer with the chewing tobacco, I never having any of these. The stimulant was there. I was just in heaven. Now, that was one night, and I thought, okay, it was one night. But it gave me this feeling. They were laughing at me, you know. Not at me, but with me. I was speaking my mind. All these little things that I would hold in because I was afraid of what people would think about me if I held it in. I would hold those in, but that night I just let it fly, you know. It was like there was no filter on my tongue that night. I was able to just let it all go. I didn't become a daily drinker or anything at that point. You know, I just knew that alcohol made me feel good. I really didn't binge too much after that, but I knew it was there. Getting on into high school, after we got our licenses, all me and all my friends got our licenses. I mean, the thing to do was to go to a party. I mean, we didn't have cell phones back then, so you met at the local McDonald's, you found out whose parents were out of town, and you went to a party. What helped me there was I finally started drinking at parties because I got a pretty decent curfew. Probably I had to be home around 1 in the morning in high school, which wasn't too bad. And all I had to do every night was walk in and say, I'm home. So in all of my drunken stupors on the way home, I would sit there and go, I'm home, I'm home, I'm home. Just practicing it over and over again. And 90% of the time, they were half asleep, and they said, oh, okay, and I'd just go to bed. So I could wake up in the morning and, you know, get my teeth brushed, and, you know, they were none aware of what I was doing. And my friends and I were actually pretty good about having a designated driver. You know, we'd be like, hey, it's your turn to drive tonight. The rest of us get to get drunk. And truthfully, I never drank any alcohol for the taste. It was always, you know, if I'm going to drink, I'm going to get drunk. That was how I wanted to drink. One of the bad instances I had in those situations was my parents went out of town one night. Now, I didn't plan on having a party, and you know, none of my friends really were, let's have the party at our house kind of thing. We'd seen the damage done. You know, so we weren't going to do that. But when my parents are away, I'm willing to try a little bit stronger stuff. So I went out and got some grain alcohol and made, you know, grain punch and ended up, you know, I was the one that had parents out of town, so I got to get drunk. My friends drove me around. We did the McDonald's routine, ended up out someplace in Oakton. And I'm pretty far into that pint and punch. And, you know, the parties are dying. So there's a small group. I go, oh, why don't we just go back to my house? My parents aren't home. So I end up having this party, which truthfully wasn't too much of a big party, to tell you the truth. A bunch of guys came over and ended up playing a lot of video games and drinking. The girls weren't showing up. But I kept drinking. And that was the first night that I actually experienced blackout. I woke up in the morning, there was a dent in the dishwasher. A few other things were somewhat broken that I could repair, and I'm asking them what happened, and they said, you don't remember? You're the one that put your head through the dishwasher. You know? So, what that told me was, okay, I gotta quit drinking this hard Everclear stuff. I'm never going to drink that again. Another instance of probably a sign was going back to that designated driver bit. Was on the night that it was my night to be a designated driver, I would always get them dropped off. You know, it'd be 1 a.m. You know, like I said, there's not alcoholism in my family, but they kept a stocked bar. And truthfully, what has ended up happening at our house would be like, oh, it's Christmas, New Year's. We better go back out and get some new stuff. I bet this is stale. You know, they did not check their bottles. So when I was designated driver night, I'd come home, I'd go downstairs, make a few rum and cokes to try and get to sleep. You know, that should have been a sign there, too. To me, I never did really understand drinking alcohol for pleasure of it tastes good. You know, it was always to get drunk or to get my mind to shut off. That's the biggest key, probably, is the mind piece. High school went on pretty much that same way. A lot of parties, but what the alcohol did was it allowed me to ask some girls out. You know, I got to, and I will say I didn't start one relationship that wasn't a drunken one-night stand, and that's how it started. You know, I had to start my relationships that way. I couldn't actually get the nerve up to ask a woman out or to dance or to anything. It was always, now I'm drunk, I can let my words fly. I don't care what she thinks. But, you know, then the next day the ice was broken, so for some reason I was able to be myself a little bit more. And I got through high school. You know, I was pretty good grade-wise, but they did drop off. Senior year, you know, I started putting on weight because I was drinking beer all the time. You're talking about a kid in freshman year. I was a wrestler and was 112 pounds. By senior year, I was 150 pounds. You know, putting on a lot of beer weight there. Getting out of high school, I finally, I didn't want to go to college either. Because there was a fear of leaving a known situation. Another big issue I have is change and unfamiliar surroundings. And I applied to two colleges. I applied to Maryland because they had a horticulture program and I could commute over there. And I applied to Northern Virginia Community College. Maryland didn't accept me and my grades weren't good enough, so I was a commuter student for about a year. Got into that and I had to hit a research paper, and back then you didn't have the internet, you had to go to the library all the time. When I hit that, I was like, school is just not for me. It just isn't for me. And I am still about 18 years old and I give up the whole school routine. I don't want to go to school. End up getting a job with the local cable company, installing cable, troubleshooting cable. Now, I'm 18, drinking age is 21. I'm hanging around with a bunch of people that are more so in their 20s, maybe 30 years old. We do these sweep things in the evening where we go to apartment buildings, knock on doors, disconnect cable if people are stealing, and then afterwards, like, hey, y'all want to go out and get something to eat and drink? And, you know, I did end up growing a beard because I looked way too young, so sitting at the table, they had no trouble. I never got carded drinking with these folks, enjoyed my drinking. I ended up with a steady girlfriend that I had. We were together about 3 years, and I'm working this cable job, and you know, I did have this determination that I want to make this cable job, make money, and she wants to get married and have kids. Well, I'm only 18. You know, I think, truthfully, I was with her when I turned 21. And another, going back to fear of what people think of me, she wanted to take me to a bar for my first legal drink. And I was in jeans and a t-shirt, and I was like, no, I ain't going to no bar. They'll make fun of me or whatever. I'm not dressed for a bar. Now, mind you, you don't really, after I finally got into the bar scene, realize that doesn't really matter too much. But she did buy me make me go into 7-Eleven and buy my first legal beer. It wasn't really a big deal. But that relationship came to an end. She wanted kids. I didn't want kids. I didn't want to get married at that point. I was in this mode of I've got to make some savings, make something before I got married. And that relationship sort of, you know, broke me a bit. Thought things were good and it just didn't work. Long story short is she ended up seeing a guy behind my back, and they ended up getting married 2 weeks after she broke up with me. So it was that was a little bit tough to take. And mind you, I ended up leaving the cable job, and I convinced my parents to pay for a trade school to do computer repair. And on the side, I was working at this convenience store that was in Vienna where they got married. And on the day of their wedding, I had to give everybody directions to her wedding because they kept popping in. Probably should move this along a little bit. That relationship ended, and, you know, I went to trade school, ended up getting some pretty good computer jobs. You know, I was making decent money. Now, all my buddies had gone to four-year schools. I'm still living at home. I mean, there's not a whole lot of issues. You know, I did like to drink when I studied, and my mom would give me a little bit of heck about, you know, really, a six-pack, another six-pack? You know, I always would drink while I studied, because if I didn't, my mind was in five different places instead of what I needed to focus on. And I really started enjoying I got moved out of the house, met another girl, went on a date with her that didn't work out, but she had all these friends. And I ended up starting to party with her all the time. It was at least twice a week, if not three times a week, we were out. Alcohol was working for me. I would go out with them and drink, and, you know, she'd bring a new friend along, I had a new friend. She'd bring another new friend along, I had another new friend. I'm happy to say that the original girl is still friends with me, but she is not friends with any of the women that I dated that she brought in. I can't believe she's still friends with me, but, you know, that was how it worked, and I was having my heyday. My 20s were great. I was out of the house. The only thing that bugged me, well, let me rephrase that. Going back to all my buddies having a degree, and I didn't, but I was making the same money they were. You know, I was like, okay. And this is another thing, I'm always comparing myself to people. Comparing their outsides to my insides. I was making great money. I was commuting from Herndon to Calverton every day, and this opportunity came up to work for a company over in Fairfax. It was my buddy's mom found it. She worked there. It was a great job. I was the company's plan administrator. I took care of all their computers. Now, up to that point, I was seeing myself as a bigwig. Look what I've done without a college degree. When I got in there, this company generally didn't hire people without degrees. But since I was overhead, they made an exception. But then they kept pushing me. You've got to get a degree. You've got to get a degree. I was like, why? Well, you know, I look at my work. My work's good. And I saw it as they were hounding me and looking down upon me. When truthfully, they were really just trying to look out for my future. You know, getting an education is a good thing. I finally did take them up on their offer because they paid for it. I was going to night school, a lot of drinking, because in order for me to study, I had to drink. I had moved out to Noakesville. And I found my, it was a long time friend. He was a little bit older than us, but I knew he drank like me. I had previously worked with him in the car business. I was a lot porter in high school, and in the car dealership, I would come in at 3 o'clock, and the mechanics were getting off at 3. So Chris's job was to come up there, get some money from them, go across the street to the Rexall and get some beer. And they didn't card, and they also, the Rexall knew where the beer was going. So I drank with this guy a lot back in my days at the car dealership. And we became roommates. And, you know, every night, that's when I started drinking a lot. It was every day, you know. One of us would stop to get the beer on the way home. We did a lot of garage drinking. We had projects, working on cars, working on his house, rebuilding his house. It was all Saturdays was, our garbage clanked a lot. moving in with him, having this job, going to school, he was my best friend. He ended up getting a girlfriend. I'm out there in Noakesville and working in Northern Virginia. You know, I was doing the drunk driving back and forth from Northern Virginia to Noakesville. Now, mind you, it was President's Day in 1997, I guess. Well, not President's, the Sunday before, because Daytona 500 was on. And my dad and I always get together to watch the race, and this time he was coming out to our house. I was like, oh, I can drink as much as I want. You know, I don't have to go anywhere. And I got pretty lit. You know, I was drinking heavy. And then he left. You know, we had a good deal. And that girl that I was telling about with all the friends said, hey, Chris, do you want to come up for dinner? And I was like, sure. Yeah, a free meal, I'll come up. And you know, I still had a 12-pack left. I threw that in the car because I figured I'd need it when I got up there. But I guess partially because of the race, I thought I was Dale Earnhardt that night, and I rolled my truck on Ben Hill Road, turned it upside down, didn't have a seatbelt on. The truck was totaled. I had a hard time finding the door handle to get out of the car, but managed to get out of the car, and the first thought in my head was that beer. And I went searching for it again, and I tried to toss it away, and then some cars stopped, and people had cell phones. Well, I ended up, you know, going to jail that night. And that put a lot into me, not to stop my drinking, but I can't drink and drive anymore. I ended up getting off on a technicality. It was a holiday weekend. They didn't have the breathalyzer available. The lawyer was trying to set some sort of precedent, so I got lucky. You know, I was like, man, that could have been a lot worse. I'm sitting here fearing the future. How am I going to drive, get to work without a license, all this? But that put me in this mode where I was stuck at home. You know, because I did know that I wasn't going to intentionally drink and drive. I can't say that I never drank and drive, because when I ran out, I would go to the local store. Move this up a little bit. Once he got that girlfriend, I ended up doing a lot of alone drinking. Then he was moving her in. I finally ended up buying the house out here in Culpeper. And I took a break for a while. I got in shape. I wasn't drinking as much. Things were going good. You know, I've got this material stuff that's making me feel better. I ended up with another girlfriend. But that relationship was long distance. She lived in Springfield. Not true long distance, but she lived in Springfield, and she had three kids, and we only saw each other every 2 weeks, because that's the way her custody situation was set out. But I was drinking every day, you know, every day drinking. It started to become bad to where I pretty much had alcohol in my system all the time. I could always make it through the workday, but the rest of the rides home were always, I'm not going to drink today. Well, yeah, you deserve it. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. And I would always end up turning into the 7-Eleven and getting my beer and drinking myself to pass out. And in the morning, you know, the wake-ups were, you know, throwing up bile every morning. You know, I was always wondering why people at work were, you know, they looked like they had energy. I'm just tired. I can't seem to stay awake, and you know, I'm not going to drink tonight, so I get some rest, and then everybody knows the cycle. It's just over and over again. And I have to thank that girlfriend a lot, because I had some problem. I mean, I was having some health problems. One night I did rounds of Red Bull and vodka, because I was like, oh, give me some energy. I've heard this is a new drink. Let me drink it. I'm no reason. I'm at home. I'm by myself. There's no real reason for it. But the next morning, I'm having pains in my arm. And, well, morning. It was like 3 a.m. I was having pains in my arm. I checked myself in to Culpeper Hospital. Whatever they gave me to, I am horrible about knowing what drugs or what, but whatever they gave me slowed my heart down. I started feeling better. And I checked myself out. So probably between 4 and 6. So I went back home. Well, guess what? It came back again. And the girlfriend was coming out that morning, so I was like, well, I'll just hang out until she comes, and she's known for being late. And I'm just dying, waiting for her to show up. And she's not showing up. She's not showing up. Finally, she shows, checked me in. You know, I end up staying overnight. Doctor had a conversation with me about, you know, hey, you know, you had a lot of alcohol in your system. I was like, well, I'm depressed. You know, things aren't going good in my work. Making up things. I always relate to when they say we aren't honest with physicians or the medical community. It came out to be a gastrointestinal issue. They sent me to a nutritionist. You know, okay, no big deal. I can get back to normal. But that growing up, I had, how to cleanly say this, I had bathroom issues as well all the time and couldn't control my bowels. And I was like, this isn't normal. Finally, I sort of caved, and I was like, well, there's something wrong. I'm depressed. Hey, that doctor, agreed with me that I was depressed. But I'm still worried about what people think of me and don't want to make the call. I did finally go see a doctor. Now, the first thing she wanted to do was put me on medication for depression. I took it, and you know what? It really didn't do diddly for me. I didn't feel it up me or down me or anything. But admittedly, the first time I was honest with the doctor saying that, you know, there's something going on with my drinking. You know, I just need to control my drinking. I'm not an alcoholic, but I just got to be able to control this stuff. And she helped me. I said, well, have you ever talked to anybody about it? And I was like, no. So she suggested some counselors, and she suggested a particular one. Unfortunately, he didn't take my insurance. So I ended up with another one that actually specialized in alcohol as a female. I didn't really want to go talk to a female. But I walked in there with that counselor, and the first meeting, she just let me blow off steam, talk about everything. The second meeting, she's like, you sound like an alcoholic, you should go to AA. Now, I didn't mention early on that I was familiar with AA as the place you go when you don't want to drink ever again in your life. I had two alcoholics that were on my street. I watched them in their drinking period and out of their drinking period. The one was one of my, the right next door neighbor. I was friends with his son. During his drinking period, I had all these Tonka toys over in their sandbox because it was a great sandbox. Well, and in his drunken stupor, he got mad at us and threw all those toys away. And my parents said, you're never going over there again, even though to play. But we eventually did. But he got sober. The woman down the street, now I was a paper boy too. So I got to see her in her glory with her whiskey sours or whatever, shaking and slurring. And then I saw her after she recovered. Both of them recovered well. The neighbor right next door that threw my toys away, not until I got here did I realize he's trying to make amends to me. He bought me something for every birthday that he had until he passed away. My parents didn't quite enjoy it because he usually got me a roll of chewing tobacco. But he always, you know, always gave me something on my birthday. But I knew that as you're going to stop drinking, you know, you got to quit totally. And I was not going to go there. And I kept going back to this counselor, and she says, well, how'd you do this week? And I said, well, I tried. Well, I only had 7 last night, so that's not too much. She was like, well, you you've got to just, you know, hold on tight grip and avoid the place and avoid the place. Finally, I was like, well, I'm going to take her suggestion and go to an AA meeting. Now, I know a lot of people down here, you know, I want to go to a different one that nobody's going to know me, but because I locked myself up, I knew nobody in Culpeper as it was. I was actually planning on going Monday night on Martin Luther King's birthday, but I just didn't. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And Tuesday night, I got drunk that Sunday night, and it took all Monday to get over that hangover. I wasn't going out. Ended up taking Tuesday off, too. I'd take a day off of work. And I finally was like, okay. And I ended up going down to the Tuesday night meeting at Church on the Rise. Now, for me, I was a little weary. It's a dark place. There's people smoking cigarettes. And I don't know. I come from a white-collar place, and these people look shady and scary. And I ended up I'm always early for everything, so I did sit out in the parking lot and watch a lot of people go in. Now, mind you, I thought I was going in late, and I'm sitting right on the corner and not knowing how the room's set up. And people were still coming in, and I'm like, dang, I thought I was going to sneak in here. And here I'm sitting right next to the chair. They start reading everything, and then they're passing how it works around the table. I'm like, I don't want to read in front of these people. I don't know them. Luckily, it finished with the guy right next to me. And they did the, hey, we have a newcomer. I think they asked, is there any newcomers here? And I think my answer was, I'm just here checking this out. I don't know. But then they shared on the first step. They shared a lot of what I've been describing to you, where I related with all the fears, you know, how much fear I had in me, how much worrying about what other people thought of me. I just heard that and related right away. I made it through that meeting, went home, did what I've heard others do. I balled up in bed in the fetal position and just said, God, I hope this works. That was my prayer. And I had a feeling roll over me that I've never felt before. I don't know, I can't describe it. But that gave me the feeling that, you know what, this is going to work. And, you know, I didn't have a feeling to drink since then. I just haven't had occasional, there's the beer chop going by and that condensation, that looks good, but never that urge to actually pick up a drink. I ended up going to a Thursday night meeting, and one of the gentlemen there ended up giving me a Joe and Charlie CD. Now, he didn't give me the whole kit. He just gave me the doctor's opinion. I was like, okay, I got a long ride. My commute right now is Culpeper to Sterling. And part of my thinking with this was, what am I going to do? How am I going to tell all these people I drink with that I don't drink anymore? All this is going through my head in this period. And I'm listening to that CD. And being a computer guy, my entire job is to see logic. What's this? What's that? How can I look at it from this angle? How can I look at it from that angle? And I always felt that I should have been able to beat alcohol with my willpower. My dad would always push the willpower thing. You can do it if you got the willpower. You can do it. For alcohol, I just couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. And then when I listened to that CD and the doctor's opinion and the description of the allergy, you know, the fact that I take one in and it leads to one and two, one and three, one and four, and I never know when it's going to stop. That was the trigger for me. I was like, that logic makes sense. That was the big, okay, I'm going to go through with this full force. And that CD also led me to, there must be more of these out there. And being a computer guy, I got on the internet, started finding speakers. I was downloading speakers left and right. I was like, I'm going to get sober listening to these people. Now, I started making it to the hospital meeting, and this guy kept following me around. Told me to come to Saturday morning meeting. Now, he thought it was going to be a test. You know, 7 a.m., that's going to be a test. Now, I get up at 4:30 every day. That's not a test. But I went over there and I started listening to how they shared, you know, and the readings, and I got to listen to the readings. And, you know, and then listening to all those speakers I had downloaded, you know, darn if not all of them would say, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. I'm like, well, I said I was going to do this all in, so I better get a sponsor. And this particular gentleman, he sat over there and just seemed at peace. The other thing in those, they were like, find somebody that has something you want. And I was like, I wish I could be that peaceful. I'm not that peaceful. My mind's always going. And the other line is, if I, you know, and this will give him away, obviously, is, if I was any happier, it had to be two people. But you know, that triggered it. I was like, going to go ahead and ask this guy. And thanks to him, I was able to go through the steps. You know, all those nights sitting on the couch, it was always somebody else. I was always drinking at somebody else. What they did, what's wrong in my life. Him taking me through those steps, that fourth step especially, it was the first time I ever actually looked at myself. You know, it was always somebody else. It was never me. And gosh, it was like, just came out of the paper. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, interesting how you do all these, this huge list. And you get over there, that column, fear, 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 fear. You know, it just boils down over and over again, do I fear, you know. And fear is such a big piece of me, or a big piece of my problem. But actually seeing it was the light. You know, actually, seeing that, hey, this is what's wrong with me. And now I can work on it. And now I have this book and this program to work on it. I am far from a good alcoholic, but, well, depending on which way you're describing that. But, I'm far from the spiritual person I want to be. You know, this program's at least shining a light on all the things I need to work on. Oh. And I have a lot to work on. I won't say that I'm far from done, and I don't plan on actually leaving. God willing, I'll stay here. Going through, if I go a little bit more through the steps, one of the funniest things is the first night I met with Rich. He would come over Tuesday night and we'll sit down and we'll talk about it. And darn if I walk in the door, he says, get in the car, we're going on a 12-step call. I'm like, okay. And then we drive down there and he's, you know, giving me the whole, because I was like, well, you know, I've always believed there's a God. You know, if it isn't God in the religion sense, there is something bigger than me. Sometimes I'm like, well, for all you scientists, it could be a whole other life form in another universe that's controlling us. You know, it's a higher power. It's bigger than we are. I've always believed in that. No, yeah, he went through that. How's your life unmanageable? I'm like, well, you know, I've never been to prison. I've never da-da-da. But, you know, I'm not making it to work. I'm not this and I'm not that. And I'm like, all right, well, he goes, are you willing to make a decision to turn your life over? And I was like, I don't know about that. And he gave me the three frogs on a log speech. I was like, oh, I'm just making a decision. Okay. I can handle that. I'm just going to do that decision to turn it over. And then we met with somebody. Gosh, I think I may have been a month or two in. I can't remember. And, you know, turns to me and tells me to share to this guy sitting in a hospital bed. I'm like, what am I going to be able to share to him? You know, but I just said, hey, right now this stuff looks like it works. You know? I suggest you try it. But we got through three, and then he got me into a formal, we met weekly. He gave me, had a step study that helped us along. I was adamant about going home every week after those and doing all the, you know, homework. And that homework's paid off. As I said, I haven't had the desire to drink since. Four and five were interesting because, you know, as many have said, you got those deep, dark secrets you're not going to tell anybody, but then, you know, you're sitting there in front of your sponsor and you say it and you think it's so bad, and he's like, okay, is that all? You know? AA's taught me I'm not unique. AA's taught me that there's other people out there that think a lot like me. Made me feel, I actually feel more welcome here than any place I've ever felt, because I know I can say just about anything and somebody else will have experienced it or done it. I don't have the fear in these rooms. Six and seven, we were talking about those at the meeting the other morning, and I did the exact thing, but I worried that I don't have a shelf, so I couldn't put the book on the shelf. So I ended up putting it on my fireplace mantle. You know, I wanted to follow it to the T, although the mantle will work. And I sat for my hour. And, you know, that first thing after the first step, or the fifth step, is that pink cloud feeling. I was, you know, just riding it and riding it. Then I started to, you know, I got some service positions. Started out as coffee maker. Now the alcoholic comes back in, I'm going to be the best damn coffee maker there is, you know. Now, mind you, I've never made coffee before I became a coffee maker. I've heard plenty of people say that. But my logical mind says, well, the can says 2 scoops of this. I went to the store and bought the actual measuring cup so that every week I would use the right measuring. Now, tell you the truth, I think most of them thought it was weak because I was making it as the can said. I got that position, and then I was GSR for the group. And they sent me down to an assembly, and I was like, holy crap, look at how many people are here. You know, there's a lot of AAs. Also early on, Rich took me out to Founders Day. That's an experience, being in a stadium, 8,000 some people out there in a stadium saying the Our Father, the countdowns, you know, got me to thinking AA's bigger than Culpeper. You know? I like to move around. I go to a lot of different meetings, travel outside of Culpeper. I was still dating girl that I was dating my first year of sobriety. You know, they say don't make any changes in that first year, and I didn't. About my anniversary, probably March after my anniversary, some things started changing in her life, and I just was not comfortable with it. You know, now mind you, I also started to see that I wasn't in that relationship for the right reasons. You know, it was more about what I was getting out of it. And we had some disagreements on things, and, you know, I started looking at it, and at that time, making the best decision with the knowledge I had at the time, I ended up having to end that. Now, it hurt her pretty bad. And I sat down with my sponsor and talked about it. Lord help Taylor, you know, give him some nods for the phone calls and sitting at the kitchen table with my parents even discussing it. And it just was what I needed to do. And I'd grown as much in AA if I had stayed in it. I ended up, you know, ending that, and that allowed me to do more. I took on more service work. You know, as I said, I haven't really had the honor of sponsoring anybody, but I have thrown myself into service work. I chaired up at our home group, treasurer at our home group. You know, it's very difficult to get people around here to volunteer for service. I'm treasurer for the district. What that does is keep me in tune. You know, I'm around AAers outside of just the meeting. I'm lucky enough to have good sober people around me that invite me to conventions and stuff. I get to, you know, meet. I'm still not an outgoing person. I don't like approaching people. I'm working on that, but having a friend that is, you know, it sort of gets me introduced to other people, and then I have familiar faces, and I'm able to talk to them one-on-one the next time because I've already been introduced. But, service work, I can't say enough about service work because, you know, just being involved, for me, it's where can I actually lend my, you know, my talents. Now I actually see I do have some talents that can be useful. Before, my mind was always like, I'm not good enough. But now I'm like, well, look, I like numbers. I like manipulating checkbooks. Oh, I shouldn't say it that way. I like working figures, honestly. And, you know, we've got a few minutes here. You know, I've always had issues going back. I always thought the drunk was the guy under the bridge with the trench coat. I always thought the drunk was the person that ended up in jail, you know, and all that. And when the ninth step came around, I was like, I don't really have, you know, I didn't owe people money. I never went to jail. I didn't break any laws. Where are my amends? Where I started seeing my amends are were the keeping so many people at a distance. You know, my family was kept at a distance. My parents lived 20 minutes away, would always like to stop by, but darn, they're not allowed to come over until I get all the beer cans off the shelf and into the garbage can and out the back so they could see them. I would be invited over for dinner, wouldn't go. I now have a great relationship with my parents. I can talk openly with them. I was just hiding my feelings. It was an interesting discussion with them, you know, making that amends, but now it's more of a living amends. I meet with them every other week for dinner. My mom just wanted me to come over. I always felt I was inconveniencing her, but she made me dinner. But they just want me around. I think I'll end with what my sponsor always tells me. You know, if you want to stay sober, don't take a drink, say a little prayer, and talk to another alcoholic every day. And I've got that, and I plan on keeping it. Thanks for letting me share.